This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 10th of March, 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 10th of March. Your readers today, Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: developer lined up for major scheme, frustration at long queues at post office, and new primary officially opens. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was developer lined up for major scheme. Civic chiefs have agreed a development partner for one of the biggest ever projects in Winchester city centre. The City Council's Cabinet decided the developer for Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, although its identity will not be revealed for several days. The Council relaunched its redevelopment of Central Winchester, centred on Silver Hill, in 2021, and the project is now entering a key phase with the announcement of a co-developer and the drawing up of plans. Previous schemes have collapsed, notably in 2016 following a High Court legal challenge by Councillor Kim Gottlieb. The value of the 2016 scheme was to be around £150 million, so the new version is likely to be considerably higher. The chosen partner's identity will be revealed on March the 20th. Referred to as Bidder E, it scored a total of 82.29% in the selection process, well ahead of its rivals. The Cabinet on Monday heard that 13 potential development partners registered an interest in the scheme, with a shortlist of three chosen. The Cabinet debated an officer's report in detail, with the meeting lasting more than 5 hours. Former City Councillor Ian Tate spoke in the public participation session and was disappointed at the lack of concrete dates for when work would start. Mr. Tate said, "To say this is déjà vu is an understatement. I cannot see anything which says when anything will be built. I don't believe it. Nothing is new here. I first got elected in 1999 and nothing is new. The public want a commitment to a timescale. They want to feel something concrete is happening. Pin yourself down to a date and commit yourselves to it." Varian Lyons, the council head of programme, said, "The first 6 months will be working with the developer to agree the development delivery plan. This will set out the dates. The planning application will come 12 to 18 months after that, with the formal planning process lasting between 3 and 6 months. This means that the planning application could be submitted next year, with building work starting in 2025. Conservative group leader Councillor Caroline Horrell asked about the finances of the scheme. Mrs. Lyons said, "It's important to work with the development partner to manage the risks." Councillor Martin Todd, leader of the council, said, "We are deliberately taking a very careful and considered approach. It's a balance between thoroughness and moving ahead. It would be a risk for the city to not consider this carefully." Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "This is a very exciting decision to be making. This project has been hanging around for more than 20 years. There is excitement and apprehension due to the history of the site. We should not forget why we are doing this. It's about growing and supporting our local economy, also smartening up a neglected and abandoned part of the city." The name of the chosen development partner will be made public on March the 20th.
Frustration over long queues at post office. A city centre post office has received criticism from customers for long queues and wait times. The post office, located in and managed by W.H. Smith on Winchester High Street, was left the sole post office in the city centre following the closure of Upper High Street Post Office in November 2021. Customers have criticised the post office for long wait times, with some people having to wait for more than half an hour to be served. Criticism has also been levelled at the new opening hours for the post office, which sees its closing early on Saturdays and not opening on Sundays, with some claiming that the new hours have not been made clear. Caroline Beach of Southgate Street is one of the people who has criticised the post office. She told the Chronicle that she believes the problems are due to W.H. Smith's cutbacks, saying, "I think that they've just cut back and cut back on staff, such that they have one young lady in there, and I felt it was unfair on her to have the pressure of all those people in the queue." She continued, "I left home at 12 noon, and I only live 10 minutes out of Winchester, especially because I had a 1 p.m. meeting, and I thought I'd got a good half an hour in the post office before I need to leave, and the queue hardly moved in half an hour." Caroline told the Chronicle, "When I first moved to Winchester, there were probably 4 staff members in there every day. Recently it's gone down to 2, and that's been for several months. They need to staff it up properly." Responding to the criticism, a post office spokesperson said, "Winchester Post Office has recently been temporarily closed on Saturday afternoon and Sunday due to the ongoing staffing issues. W.H. Smith, who operates the branch, has been working hard to recruit additional staff, and we're pleased to share that the vacancies have been filled and new staff are currently undergoing training. We would ask customers to continue to be patient whilst the staff continue to work through this exceptional period. The opening hours in branches have been adjusted to Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the short term, and we hope to return to normal trading hours soon."
The new primary school has officially opened. Barton Farm Primary Academy has officially opened its doors with a special presentation featuring TV personality Alan Titchmarsh. The school, part of the University of Winchester Academy Trust, first opened in 2020 amid the COVID-19 pandemic with only a single Year R class. 3 years on, and the school has now been officially opened. Guests from the University of Winchester, Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council were given a tour of the school campus and attended a special assembly where the children heard from Alan and sang a song as a school. Some pupils were also invited to the front to recite a poem which had been written collaboratively by all the children in the school. The children were then taken outside into the school grounds where Alan planted a special commemorative tree with a plaque marking the occasion. During the assembly, he was also gifted with a copy of the school poem, and a specially engraved shovel commemorating his visit. Speaking after the ceremony, head teacher Nicola Wells said, "It's been fantastic to bring together our community. There are lots of people who were involved with the planning and the building of the school. It's taken many years. I've been involved since 2017. It took a long time for the school to come together. So it's really lovely to welcome those people back to the school to see it in operation with the children. And we're so honoured to have Alan with us today, who's made it a special event for everybody." During the event, plans were also revealed that a time capsule will be buried in the school grounds at a later date, to be dug up in 20 years' time. Located on the King's Barton development, Barton Farm Primary Academy offers education for children aged from 4 to 11 who live on the estate. It currently has 4 classes from Year R to Year 2. Nicola added, "We basically grow from the bottom up every year, so next year we'll take 2 more Year R classes. The estate should be, when it's finished, around 2,000 houses, so the school has been built to serve those houses." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Alan, and I assume that's Nicola. Alan's leaning on the shovel, having successfully planted the tree, and he's surrounded by young children from the school.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death announcements, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum, and then we'll have the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements. Barnes Melvin Robert, known as Bob, died peacefully in Thailand, aged 77. Gibbons, Michael Gibbons died peacefully at Pax Hill Care Home, aged 94. Harmon, Iris Harmon, died peacefully at Durnwood Manor Nursing Home, aged 95. Lumsden, Sir David James Lumsden, died peacefully at home on the 25th of February, aged 94. And Shearing, Samuel Shearing, died peacefully at home on the 25th of February, aged 83. Now, Andrew, I think you have a Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Rosemary Baker, and it's entitled Remembering Women of Faith. Yesterday, Wednesday the 8th of March, was International Women's Day. As it was advertised in the Radio Times that last Sunday's Songs of Praise was on Women of Faith, I thought to mark this, I would watch it. I was rather surprised when the program began with an introduction to a saint I wasn't all that familiar with, Saint Enoch. Claire McCollum, together with the theologian Helen Bond, traced the roots of this saint for us. They found that Saint Enoch was a Scottish princess in the 6th century, who survived rape and attempted murder before giving birth to Saint Mungo, the founder of the city of Glasgow, and to whom its cathedral is dedicated. They were shown in front of an impressive mural of Saint Enoch in the shopping centre that bears her name, and discuss why more is not known about women of faith in Christian history. There are fascinating stories of female biblical figures who played a fundamental role in the church's foundation, but of whom little or nothing is known. The program concludes with stories and interviews from some current women of faith who are living out their faith by helping others. On gazing through some of the Sunday papers, I picked up on a related theme. At first sight, the connection might not have been obvious. These were accounts of the consecration of the oil that will be used to anoint King Charles at his coronation. This oil has been picked and specially blended from olives which have been freshly picked alongside the grave of Prince Philip's mother in Jerusalem. It is there that she is buried on the Mount of Olives. Essential herbs and flowers, including jasmine and orange blossom, have also been added. Princess Alice of Battenberg married Prince Andrew of Greece and Denmark, and Prince Philip was their youngest son. Not at first an obvious woman of faith, but this will be revealed. After enduring exile, mental illness, separation, and widowhood, she went on to found her own order of nuns in Greece, but spent her final years at Buckingham Palace up to her death in 1969. It was her dying wish that her body should be buried next to that of her aunt, who was buried on the Mount of Olives. She had been murdered by the Bolsheviks, but had carried on singing hymns until she finally died. She had been an inspiration to Alice, and Prince Philip said that the family had been proud of her, as they were when Alice herself was proclaimed righteous among Gentiles at Israel's Yad Vashem memorial, in recognition of her role in shielding a Jewish family during the Nazi occupation in Athens. Her grandchildren knew her as a chain-smoking, card-playing eccentric who lived with them in Buckingham Palace. But I think she can be justifiably called a woman of faith. International Women's Day is an opportunity for us to be reminded of women of faith, both in history and currently, who can be an inspiration to us all and an example of how to live out our faith.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you have the first.
Headed, Hope of Pothole Repairs Fade Away, Dr. Harry Mycock. Filling potholes is an endless task, as we know, but hopes grew that Quarry Road was going to be favoured and have its potholes made a thing of the past, when last September the road was adorned with white spray paint indicating patches to be made. These were numbered too, nearly 60, I think, which, given so many, makes you wonder why not resurface the whole lot instead. 6 months later, the spray paint has largely faded away, and our hopes for repaired potholes fade with it. All that is new is that there are now more potholes following the winter to join those identified last year. And that from Dr. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
Harmonious. There have been years of discussion, but no realisation regarding the new city centre scheme, Chronicle March the 2nd. Located in a significant area of Winchester, any Silver Hill development must not in a conflict with, for example, the elegant Winchester Guildhall and nearby locations. An appropriate design, not literally mirroring Victorian or earlier periods, and not overly modern. Remember the 1970s? Winchester is a historic city, and any development should take this into account. Public consultation must be taken into account with plans presented. Ultimately, the design should involve all parties, focusing on our iconic city, not politics, thus moving ahead together in harmony. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Garnier Road. With Garnier Road now closed for 9 months, there will of course be a huge increase in traffic, filling the North Walls route with yet more slow cars and their fumes. Is it not time to accept that traffic travelling from north to south through the city can turn down St. Peter Street, joining St. George's Street at the bottom of Jury Street, rather than adding to the traffic circulating all around the Union Street and Friars Gate? If it proves not to be a success, it could be rejected once Garnier Road reopens, hopefully with a 20 mph speed limit. I can, however, see absolutely no reason why bicycles are not allowed down St. Peter Street permanently to avoid the congestion. And that is sent in by Jane Harding, Backstreet, St. Cross.
And this from Pip Billington, headed Andover Road. The intention to divert the Andover Road through the new Kings Barton housing estate gets stranger and stranger. Now we hear new home-owning residents have not been told about it by estate agents. Diverting the major northern artery in and out of the city through a residential housing estate defies all logic and is so peculiar that it is impossible not to suspect that someone has done a deal at some point and for some reason is loath to reveal it. At a time when suspicion of public bodies is great, it would be really helpful if the council would just throw their hands up and admit what is behind it, and before it is too late, people can then get together and see what can be done. No one in their right mind can think this is a good idea. Irritating for drivers and horrendous for the people in Kings Barton. We should be encouraging everyone to walk or cycle. This is going to have the opposite effect. And from Pip Billington, Priors Way, Winchester.
Proper policing. Your front page story, Chronicle March the 2nd, concerning the antisocial behaviour in and around King's Walk is alarming in part because of the apparent lack of police action or concern for the victim. This follows on from your recent reports on the smashing of shop windows in the High Street. Surely it is not coincidence that the number of PCSOs in our county have been cut by over 40% in the last 5 years? Winchester desperately needs to retain small businesses such as the King's Walk Tailor. They are the ones least able to cope with the disruption and absorb the costs inflicted on them by an out-of-control minority. Our Police and Crime Commissioner talks about additional funding committed to the Hampshire Constabulary, but will this be just another empty Conservative promise? Will it be enough to restore law and order to our High Street? We urgently need to return to proper community policing where officers are visible and have time to focus on preventing and solving crimes so that criminals can no longer act with impunity. Until she and the government actually restore the funding needed, our communities and businesses will lose confidence as they continue to suffer from the sort of harassment and distress inflicted on Mr. Nixon. Winchester must not be allowed to degenerate into a city constantly blighted by hooligans inflicting criminal damage. And that was from Richard Eve of Alsford Road.
And here's a letter on the long-running saga of Silver Hill. And it's entitled, Silver Hill Ideas. It has been reported in the Hampshire Chronicle that Winchester Council is seeking the views of residents about what should happen to the Silver Hill site. It's also been reported that Winchester Council now owns most of the land in Silver Hill, which should make the redevelopment of this area much more easy to achieve. Here is what I think should happen to the Silver Hill area. The centre of Winchester, i.e. the High Street, already has loads of shops, restaurants, pubs and cafes. The centre of Winchester doesn't need any more of these places. However, what the centre of Winchester is really lacking is as follows. Number one, a large community centre in the centre of Winchester offering lots of different leisure activities to Winchester residents in the evenings as well as the daytimes. This large community centre would also be a great place where Winchester residents could meet loads of new friends and possibly make new friends. Number two, a centrally located large adult education college offering lots of educational recreational classes in the evenings as well as the daytimes. The adult education college at Week is such a long walk away for a lot of Winchester residents. A centrally located large adult education college would be much easier for Winchester residents to get to. So, here are the two main buildings that I think should be built on the Silver Hill site. These two buildings would bring such joy to Winchester residents. These two buildings should also have cafes and seating areas, both inside and outside. Winchester Council, please make it happen, and please make it happen within 2 years. And that's from Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we have Hampshire editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed Silver Hill Scheme. Here we go again. So here it comes again. The Central Winchester Regeneration, better known as Silver Hill. The City Council has chosen a development partner and will unveil its identity on March the 20th. For anyone new to the city, the scheme is a major redevelopment of land between Friars Gate and the Broadway. Previous schemes for shops and flats have foundered for various reasons, including legal challenge by the then City Councillor Kim Gottlieb. This new attempt will be the third major initiative. Get ready for a planning application in about 18 months to 2 years. The stakes could hardly be higher. Many architects and people in the property professions believe Winchester already has a reputation as being a hard place to get anything done. Cities have to evolve, so this reputation is unwelcome. There are several advantages this time around the city. The City Council now owns most of the land, which makes things considerably simpler. There will be the benefit of learning from the mistakes of the past. Had the scheme, which collapsed in 2016, been developed, it would then have been completed by now, and the city would probably have been lumbered with the white elephant of many more likely empty shops.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please. Norma.
And this is entitled What Every Woman Faces, and it's by Kimberly Barber. I write this as an old familiar feeling is returning to haunt me. A searing pain in the right-hand side of my head, just above the eyebrow, making it hard to see from the eye and even harder to concentrate. It is a pressure-light pain. Think that part of your head being squeezed, vice-like. Perhaps it could be that my skull simply isn't big enough for my brain. Something could burst. It's almost likely to be my eyeball. Why am I not concerned about this pain? And why is it so familiar to me? Well, it's one of the many parts of being a woman that many have to deal with on a daily basis. I know that my migraines are linked to my hormones. They come and gone, and as my hormones have fluctuated. They've got better during pregnancy and then came back with a vengeance when things had settled down again after. But something happened last week that most likely means that this cycle will be back again for a while. My 40th birthday. There's been a lot of talk around the menopause and in turn the perimenopause, led wonderfully by Romsey MP Caroline Noakes. It's been impressive how she has pushed the issue on to the agenda, campaigning for workplaces to recognise it and be more supportive. She's pushed for workplace champions and even for paid time off. But most importantly, she has brought awareness to the issue so people like me, who are just entering the first stages, can recognise the symptoms and not feel like they're going stark, raving mad. I was out celebrating my birthday at Tynely Hall in Hook at the weekend and had the most magnificent meal, served with a glass of exceptional red wine. I also toasted my birthday with a Kira Royale aperitif. Just two glasses of wine would not have touched the sides of a 25-year-old me. However, now it has disastrous consequences. That night, I woke up hot, incredibly hot, sweat dripping from me and with a flushed feeling that other women have been warning me about. I could have run outside and laid in the snow. The next day, the migraine was back, knocking on my forehead. Now it wasn't a drunk hangover migraine. This was a warning, you're now 40 and a perimenopausal headache. Damn, when did I become so old? And that's not to mention the creeping brain fog, which prevents you from remembering things like your old children's names or just simply focusing on the insatiable rage which descends like a red mist at any given second and makes me want to kick the wall or shout or perhaps push something hard and most definitely swear. Luckily, with menopause now so no longer taboo, thanks to women like Caroline Noakes, I have been able to have discussions with other women about it, so none of these symptoms have me worried. I know I need to exercise more, watch what I eat and drink, and generally make more time if I am to steady the emotions. One very good friend has started a course of HRT after her symptoms became too much to cope with, and I know that helped. Help is out there should things get too much for me too. What it has made me determined to do is to be more supportive as a manager. We need to encourage more women into journalism and into higher managerial roles. It is especially important as we celebrated International Women's Day on March the 8th. MP for Basingstoke, Maria Miller, brought to my attention to how few women there are in elected positions. Just 35% of our MPs are women. This is also reflected in everyday life, where, despite females making up half the population, women are still outnumbered by men's leadership roles 2-1. If we were to address any of these issues, and even this out, we need to start looking at the problems women face on a daily basis and start showing some understanding and compassion. Let's stop this suffering in silence and allow women the freedom to talk about what's bothering them, and it might help us become more reflective and representative and also fill some job vacancies. At the very least, it might stop a few of us thinking that we've lost the plot entirely.
Thank you. Now, Andrew, I think you've got a couple of items from Belgarren, please.
Yes, and this is an alternative look at the news. There are two articles here. First is, a great night out guaranteed. You are always guaranteed a good night out when you turn up to watch a Sombourne player's panto. And Aladdin was no exception. Throughout the panto, and the story relates to the granting of wishes via lamp rubbing and an evil uncle whose intent is to take over the world, the members of the company perform their parts with gusto, charm, hilarity, and some very funny, unintentional ad-libs. Boos and hisses were in abundance. Each and every single member of the cast performed their parts well, and special mention should be made to David Welton, who was Widow Twankey, who was the most glamorous dame I've ever seen, Peter Grace, who played Officer Hugh, Leslie Everard Evans, Officer Me, both of whom were absolutely hilarious and with some wonderful verbal exchanges. And again, some judges who played wishy-washy, whose stage presence and versatility shines so bright. The panto was directed by Jonathan Crump, who did an excellent job. If you ever get the opportunity to go and watch them, you won't be disappointed. Well done all, and I will return. And that article is accompanied by a picture or a photograph of the actors on the stage, all looking quite resplendent in their costumes. The second article is Pricey Tesco Tops Gravy Train. Winchester's Sunday roast fans will have to fork out more than usual to fill their gravy boats, as a rise in bistro prices makes it the latest product to be hit by inflation. On a hunt to find out how much prices in the city have risen for the popular product, we scoured Sainsbury's, Iceland, Marks and Spencer, Poundland, and the Tesco Express and Extra stores to see whose gravy claimed the highest price. The general markup for the product is currently sitting between £2 and £3 across most stores, with Iceland and Tesco coming in most expensive for a 190-gram tub at £3. Sainsbury's and Poundland currently have the cheapest prices, both charging £2 for 190 grams, and Marks and Spencer lands right in the middle at £2.50. Tesco Extra in Winall seems to be the only store to sell a 550 gram tub of the product, priced at a whopping £5.50. And in comparison, Tesco's 190 gram tub of own brand beef gravy is priced at a humble 80p. So there we have a very exhaustive roundup of the prices of bistro across the city. And that is accompanied by a photograph of, you may well have guessed, tubs of bistro gravy.
Should we all say, ah?
Ah! Brilliant.
Thank you. So now we move on to the announcements this week, and we got some what's ons. The Theatre Royal has got The Telltale Heart, a supernatural murder mystery based on Edgar Allan Poe's classic Victorian chiller, and that's on from the 16th to the 18th of March at 7:30. If you want details, you can phone the box office on 01962 840440. In the Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 18th of March at 7:30, there is a coronation concert, Music for a Royal Occasion, featuring the Wainfleet Singers, Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, and a stellar lineup of soloists. And for that, tickets, you can either get them on the door, or you can phone the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 200. The Chesil Theatre, between the 25th of March and the 1st of April, has Nasty Neighbours. It's a black comedy set in suburbia. For tickets, go to chesiltheatre.org.uk. There's a floral club workshop in support of Winchester Hospice showing the art of wreath making, and that's going to be held in the grounds of the Hospital of St Cross on Saturday, March the 25th, between 10:30 and 1. And the tickets include tea, coffee, and cake, and all materials that you need. And there is also a talk on Thursday the 23rd of March in the Cathedral on Ukraine, and journalist Luke Harding gives a talk entitled Invasion: Russia's Bloody War and Ukraine's Fight for Survival. And all the tickets, again, you can get them on the door, but all tickets are in aid of the Disasters Emergency Committee, and that's on Thursday the 23rd of March at 7 p.m. And finally, just advance notice for something that's coming up in June at Broadlands in Romsey. It's the Nostalgia Show. The Broadlands estate will be transformed into a celebration of nostalgia, bringing together a retro mix of vintage vehicles, dancing, and family festive vibes. And that's between June the 16th and 18th this year. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 10th of March at 6:31 a.m. and begins at 6:01 p.m. and on Wednesday the 15th of March it ends at 6:20 a.m. and begins at 6:09 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please phone us on 01962 861 229. And this number is also on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki, please.
Sausage and Cider lineup. Following its success across the country, the Sausage and Cider Festival is making its Winchester debut with a selection of tribute bands. The festival will take place at North Wall's Recreation Ground on August the 19th with a host of live entertainment, food vendors and bars. This year's performers include The Four Kicks, Copycat Killers, Scam Fender, Queen's Greatest Hits, Madness Tribute Band One Step Behind, as well DJ Panda and singer-songwriter Darren Poyser. Organisers are also searching for local tribute bands to join the lineup. Marketing manager Lee Fudge said Sausage and Cider Festival Outdoors is a feel-good event with great music and a huge variety of cider flavours and great independent food operators. We are excited to be able to host our outside event in Winchester for the first time. As well as music on stage, there will also be speed sausage eating contests and 6 round chili eating competitions. Sausage flavours to try include rhubarb, cherry bakewell, chocolate and pineapple, in addition to more than 25 cider flavours. The event will run from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. and under 18s must be accompanied by someone over 21. The festival has already seen its pre-sale and general sale tickets sell out ahead of the final release tickets alongside the band announcements. For 50% off, go to sausagecidefest.co.uk. Sorry, sausageandciderfest.co.uk.
I've been drawn to this article by the most lovely photograph of Winchester Cathedral with the trees bare and the snow lying on the ground. And it says, Winchester residents woke up this week to find themselves in a winter wonderland following an out-of-season snowfall. It followed a yellow weather warning from the Met Office with some disruption across the county. And the warning, put in place at midnight on Tuesday, March the 7th, remained until 9 a.m. on Wednesday. Residents were warned that the snow would disrupt travel and that the pavements, cycle paths and roads could become impassable. Another flurry of heavy snow was forecast to potentially hit the areas the Chronicle went to press before turning to sleet and rain. Hampshire County Council sent out gritters to clear roads and ensure that the priority routes were safe to drive and to keep traffic moving, with multiple grit runs throughout the day. Meanwhile, Stagecoach warned commuters that service would be disrupted during the morning, and multiple services from Winchester City Centre saw delays of up to 20 minutes. Schools across Winchester district stayed open for both staff and pupils despite the snowy conditions, with no closures reported. I am reliably informed that spring will come this year.
And this article is entitled Anger and Frustration at Supply Problems with Southern Water. And like your previous reader, I can also relate to this one because we also lost water twice. The leaders of local authorities across Hampshire have written to Southern Water to demand action over the recent supply problems. Approximately 13,000 homes were affected by the low water pressure or water outages in this latest failure from Wednesday the 15th of February to Sunday the 19th of February, with people in Winchester, Test Valley, Eastleigh and Southampton affected. Now, the leaders of Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Test Valley Borough Council, Eastleigh Borough Council, New Forest District Council, and Southampton City Council have written to Lawrence Gosden, Chief Executive of Southern Water. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "Southern Water have been letting us down in so many ways recently, with sewage in our high street and rivers and failure to supply any water at all twice in recent months in the south of our district. Their response when things go wrong has been wholly inadequate. That's what this letter sets out. There's real fury across the south of Hampshire. They can't go on like this. The letter said, hundreds of thousands of residents have experienced or been at risk of supply loss. And this is in addition to the potential impacts on critical frontline services such as social care, health and education. Your company has repeatedly failed to learn the lessons of previous responses and deliver an acceptable service to your customers in our communities. This is in no way a criticism of your individual staff members that worked hard for very long hours throughout these responses. It is a systemic failure. Despite your company's subsequent assurances that investment was taking place and your procedures being improved, we find ourselves now writing to you to highlight the anger and frustration of the thousands of residents that experienced disruption and inadequate support during further incidents in December 2022 and February 2023. Mr. Gosden previously said, to recognise the fact that this has been the second outage, we will be offering double the normal compensation, which takes the overall compensation package to about £3 million.
Two headings here. 12th Winchester Scout Group visits St Catherine's View Care Home. Cub Scouts visit Brighton's Dementia Homes Patients Day. A group of Cub Scouts have shared their enthusiasm with residents at a Winchester Dementia Care Home. 14 visitors from the 12th Winchester Royal Green Jacket Scout Group were welcomed as special guests at Colton Care's St Catherine's View Care Home in Stanmore Lane. Time to coincide with the birthday of Scouts Movement founder Lord Baden-Powell, the visit on Wednesday, February the 22nd, prompted smiles and conversations all around as the children showed off their badges and what they needed to do to achieve awards. There were also campfire songs, a recreation of the Scout Promise, a demonstration of Scout hand signals, and a talk about Baden-Powell and the founding of the movement. Resident Maggie Green said, "They were amazing and so friendly. It was great to hear what they have to do in the Scouts." Fellow resident Denise Howard agreed, saying she hoped the Scouts would be asked back. The visit was organised by Laura Sheldrake, companionship team leader at the care home. Laura said, "The Cubs came well equipped with pictures, information, books and their campfire blanket. Everyone joined in with the songs and trying out the hand actions. The interaction with our residents was a joy to see. Residents were all so engaged and enjoyed every minute. Intergenerational activities like this are so valuable as they bring out the best in everyone." Scout Group spokesperson Stacey Burridge said, "We had a fabulous and informative evening visiting St Catherine's View to celebrate Founders Day. Our club were a little apprehensive at first, but soon settled into the swing of things, talking to residents about their uniform, badges and favourite activities." She continued, "We are very much looking forward to visiting St Catherine's View again soon and welcoming a few of the residents to our Scout Hut for tea and cake, continuing to bridge the gap between the older and younger generations. Formed just over a century ago, in 1921, the 12th Winchester is the oldest continually operating Scout group in Winchester. Its Royal Green Jacket military affiliation was officially begun in 1943 to recognise fundraising that the group did for the regiment's Prisoners of War Fund." And there's lots of pictures, everyone obviously loving it. And there was St Catherine's View residents, Moira Pullen and Gillian Swaby, enjoying meeting their visitors. And it was resident Denise Howard listens to a Cub Scout describing her badges. And resident Madge Goodman with a young visitor, other sweetly holding his hand against her cheek. And there's two Cubs also entertaining Madge Goodman, who's sitting there. They've got very large grins on their faces. Anyway, that's for the camera. St Catherine's View resident Maggie Green with Cubs from the 12th Winchester Royal Green Jacket Scout Group image. There we are. It's all lovely.
Chuck Berry's guitar may fetch $20,000. When rock and roll legend Chuck Berry broke a guitar guitar string on stage at Wembley Stadium, London, in 1972. Someone thrust a replacement guitar into his hand to finish the show. That guitar, a 1964 Gibson Firebird, is expected to fetch up to £20,000 at auction in Wiltshire this month. Riding high on the charts with his hit My Ding-a-Ling, Berry headlined the 1972 London Rock and Roll Show at Wembley alongside Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard and Bill Haley and the Comets. At the show's climax, Berry broke a guitar string, so a quick-thinking backing guitarist, Terry Gibson, handed him the Gibson Firebird. The moment was captured in the film of the concert, and the photographer took an iconic photograph of Berry with a replacement guitar, which became the cover of the 2017 album of Berry's Greatest Hits. The strap, being auctioned with the guitar, also is believed to be the one worn by Chuck Berry. The guitar has been sold by a private collector who bought it from a family of its owner, the late Terry Gibson. Gibson, whose real name was Terry Clemson, was a renowned British rock and roll guitarist who played with the artists such as Gene Vincent and Bo Diddley, as well as his own band, the Downliners. Gibson died in 2020. The auctioneer Luke Hobbs from Gardner Holgate Auctions near Bath said, "We've been auctioning guitars for over 15 years, but this is the only second time I've seen Chuck Berry instrument come up for sale. They're exceptionally rare." Even though Berry used our guitar for a single night, the London Rock and Roll Show was a landmark event and is fully documented on film. Other items for sale in the auction include an acoustic guitar owned by The Who's Pete Townshend, an amplifier used by Eric Clapton, and a guitar owned by the late Jeff Beck. Other rare items in this late 1960s double-neck Gibson guitar, formerly owned by Mike Oldfield — only 20 of these guitars were ever made. And there's a picture of Luke Hobbs posing with a Chuck Berry guitar and holding up the cover of the record.
Food firm in local pledge. The county's food group has announced the return of a corporate friend who will be supporting the organisation's growing goal to promote local produce. Harvest Fine Foods, a produce supplier who works closely with more than 40 local producers, has renewed its corporate partnership with Hampshire Fair. The company hopes to show its continued commitment to local producers and build sustainable relationships by backing the team which champions the county's produce. The commercial manager of Hampshire Fair, Tracy Nash, said, "It is with huge pleasure that I personally welcome back Harvest as a corporate friend. As Hampshire Fair is a community interest company, Harvest support is much valued. I have worked with Harvest since I joined Hampshire Fair 10 years ago. We have always enjoyed a strong working relationship, and it is a massive positive that their support for Hampshire Fair will continue into the future." Harvest Managing Director Steve Whitman said, "Here's to the next 10 years. Following Harvest Fine Foods' recent acquisition by Bidfood, our identity as Harvest Fine Foods has not changed. We are still an independent legal entity as Harvest Fine Foods Limited, and will continue to manage our suppliers locally and agree terms locally. Harvest is proud to support all our local producers, and our relationship with Hampshire Fair and its members will remain strong, and we will continue to maintain and grow our purchasing relationships with local suppliers."
CCTV caught drink driver writing off car. CCTV captured the dramatic moment a drunk student crashed into vehicles in a Winchester street, causing thousands of pounds of damage. Victim Andrew Jolliffe of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, had only had the BMW X3 for a week when he found it had been smashed into on January the 28th. The car was driven by a 20-year-old Andrew Newman in a Ford Fiesta, sorry, was driven into by 20-year-old Andrew Newman in a Ford Fiesta, who has been disqualified from driving for 20 months. The force of the crash pushed the BMW into Mr. Jolliffe's work van, which belongs to a water cooler company, causing damage estimated at £9,000. CCTV from a camera on Mr. Jolliffe's property shows the force of the crash and Newman, a student at Winchester University, stepping out of his car. Mr. Jolliffe, father of five, says he's upset that police only charge Newman with drink driving. He believes that the incident could have had far more serious consequences and should have been treated as dangerous driving. To add insult to injury, Newman's Ford is still outside Mr. Jolliffe's property more than 1 month after the incident. Mr. Jolliffe said, "I had gone shopping and pulled up outside my house. A few minutes later, I realised that someone had hit the car. He hasn't even been back to the car. It's still outside my house. I now have a new car, but we loved that car. We saved hard for it, and we had it for less than a week." Mr. Jolliffe described the incident as disgusting. Mr. Jolliffe, who has lived in Stanmore for 43 years, said he's never had an issue with the nearby student population until now, and added that he would appreciate an apology. He also called on the police to do more. A Hampshire Constabulary spokesman said they did not pursue dangerous driving, as it would have the same penalty as drink driving. They said, "We were called at 7:52 p.m. on January the 28th, following a report of a road traffic collision involving three cars. A 20-year-old man from Chelmsford, Essex, was arrested on suspicion of drink driving and dangerous driving. Following an investigation, Andrew Newman, 20, of Little Tweed in Chelmsford, was charged with drink driving. The result of this offence would result in a disqualification period, which would have been the same result if he had been charged with dangerous driving. Newman appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on February the 16th and pleaded guilty to drink driving. He was fined £120 and handed a disqualification period of 20 months, which can be reduced to 20 weeks if he completes a driver's awareness course. Winchester University has been asked to comment.
Charity accuses builders of spreading fear over houses. A countryside charity has accused developers of scaremongering over the future of house building. The Home Builders Federations claimed that in the Financial Times that changes to planning policy could lead to a huge slump in the number of new homes built annually. Tom Fiennes, interim CEO of the CPRE, formerly the Council for the Preservation of Rural England, said, We strongly disagree with this blatant fear-mongering. Local authorities will still be expected to provide more land for the house building, but it is welcomed that in future they will be put under less pressure to allow large-scale building on our precious countryside than is currently the case. The Letwin Review was clear that we don't build enough homes, mainly because the large house builders are not motivated to tackle the housing crisis. Their main motivation, unsurprisingly, is to maximise their profits. This can be seen from their constant lobbying for more greenfield and greenbelt sites, despite enough brownfield land being available for 1.2 million homes, as well as the sluggish way big developers build new homes once they've got planning permission. They deliberately drip-feed properties into the market to exploit the dynamics of supply and demand. Letwin recommended local councils be given more power to steer the development of big housing sites, whether greenfield or brownfield, so that we get better designed, more energy efficient new housing. This is a sensible solution to a critical national problem. We need to put people before profits, which means building vastly more social homes and bringing forward developments that include a mix of tenures to better meet the needs of the local people. CPRE campaigns to promote, enhance and protect the countryside for everyone's benefit, wherever they live.
Most kids get school choice. More than 97% of parents in Hampshire have been offered a place for their child at one of their three preferences for a secondary school in September. Of those who applied for a Year 7 place by the application deadline, 90% have been offered a place at their first preference school. Hampshire County Council received 15,400 on-time applications this year, an increase of 418 applications compared to the number received for places last year. Councillor Steve Forster, Executive Member for Education, said, "Nationally, there have been greater pressures this year than had been for some time, due to a spike in the birth rate 11 years ago. This is reflected in the local picture for Hampshire, where again we've had to manage exceptional levels of demand for school places over and above those we already typically see each year. Despite this, our admissions team have still been able to deliver another fantastic result, with the vast majority of parents being offered one of their preferences. Every year, the team endeavours to meet parental preferences as far as possible, and I want to thank them for their continued hard work in the face of rising pressure in this area. For those parents and carers who have not secured a place at one of their preferred secondary schools this year, I would urge them to visit our website for advice and guidance on their options. And the admission team is now busy processing primary school applications, with school place offers due to go out to parents on April the 17th.
Pay rise for pub workers. A pub company has, with various venues in Hampshire, has introduced a blanket pay rise for its staff. Henderson Pub Company, which runs the Hunter's Inn in Rumsey, the Dolphin Inn in Hursley, and is soon to reopen the Cricketers in Alresford, has announced an 8% pay rise for its team, all its team members. The aim is to support and reward the business's hard-working staff and support them through the current financial climate. Managing Director Chris Shuttraps said, "We're aware that our colleagues and valued members are feeling and are likely to feel pressure costs as costs continue to rise in the wider economy. It's our job as a business to ensure our team members are supported and rewarded for their incredible work. The success of our business is solely down to the great people we have working with us to deliver an exceptional experience to our customers. We have ambitious plans for 2023 and need to retain and attract the very best talent in the communities where we are based." Chris and his wife Nicola Shuttraps founded the company in 2022, starting with the Hunter's Inn in Rumsey. Since then, Henderson has continued to buy or invest in 8 businesses, with the Cricketers in Alresford being his latest acquisition. Operations Manager Matt Day said, "This company-wide pay increase is just one of a package of benefits we are rolling out to our team members on our drive to be the best local employer in hospitality."
The early bird really does catch the worm. As the frosty veneer of winter melts away and the earth mellows for spring, you may notice little flurries of activity around your garden. Perhaps a robin is collecting leaves, or a song thrush is searching for a suitable place to settle. A small number of brave garden birds are already preparing for breeding, while others may have started laying their eggs, flying in the face of their species' normal nesting patterns. Early nesting is a risky move, but every year a daring few throw caution to the winds and get started well ahead of time. So why take such a risk? Well, the earlier the birds start to breed, the more offspring they can produce in a season, meaning that they can spread their genes far and wide. Typically, it will be older, more mature birds that attempt this tactic, as they have the necessary knowledge and experience to give them a fighting chance of overcoming the challenges it brings. Last year's hatchlings still have much to learn. Some species, however, nest early in the year as a matter of course. Rooks and carrion crows, for example, have eggs in the nest by mid-March. One reason for this is the early bird really does catch the worm. It is much easier to find earthworms in March when the soil is damp than later in the year when the ground becomes warmer and drier. Missel thrushes adopt a similar strategy, and an added benefit for them is that the predatory birds, such as jays, have not yet begun searching for eggs and young birds. The long-tailed tit is another early breeder. It is essential they get in at an early start, as a long-tailed tits are tasked with building what perhaps is the most labour-intensive nest in Britain. These tiny, industrious birds, sometimes called flying teaspoons on account of their distinctive lollipop stick tail that is bigger than their small round body, create soft domes from thousands of pieces of moss which they glue together with strands of sticky cobweb. Lichen fragments are then sprinkled on to create a protective camouflage before the nest is lined with feathers for warmth. It takes around 3 weeks to build, and the end result is comfortable, cozy home, the perfect place to start a family. The demands of building a nest, laying eggs and rearing young are enormous, and a bird must be in peak physical condition to succeed. You can give local birds a helping hand by providing them with protein-rich food, such as dried mealworms. That's a tasty treat.
And continuing our outdoor theme, the South Downs to get a share of a £4 million boost. England's national parks have welcomed a £4.4 million funding boost from the government, but have called for a long-term plan. The funding was announced on Wednesday, the 1st of March, and will see the money shared between 10 authorities, including South Downs, New Forest, the Broads, Dartmoor, Exmoor, the Lake District, North Yorkshire Moors, Northumberland, Peak District, and Yorkshire Dales. Money from the fund has been used to support the reintroduction of beavers into Ewhurst Park, Hampshire, after an absence of 400 years. The funding boost will support services such as visitor centres and park rangers, as well as the creation of new trails, residential programmes and mobility schemes. It will also support access and engagement programmes and conserve the park's natural beauty, wildlife and cultural heritage. Environment Secretary Therese Coffey praised their contribution to wildlife, tourism, the economy and public access, saying, "This additional £4.4 million of funding will support the important work that national park authorities do across our countryside and allow local people and visitors to enjoy these much-loved spaces." Andrew McCloy, chairman of National Parks England, said that the new funding will ease some short-term financial pressures, but a long-term plan is needed to help deliver on the government's climate and nature targets. He said, "Today's announcement is welcome news. At a time when our national parks are facing a real-term reduction in government grants, this additional funding is desperately needed. National parks account for almost 10% of England's land area and have ambitious plans to deliver on government targets for nature, climate, and public access." But Pamela Woods, chair of Dartmoor National Park Authority, called the new funding a sticking plaster. She added, "A one-off payment does not solve the underlying problems of how to sustain core services in the face of 12 years of real terms cuts." And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a couple of children clambering over trees in the South Downs area.
Online plea bags school pic of TV celeb ex-pupil. A Hampshire junior school bagged a photo of a celebrity and ex-student after calling out for former pupils' then and now pictures. Bishop Waltham Junior School posted a plea on Facebook for Amanda Holden, who attended the school from 1977 to 1981, to share a photo of herself at school as part of a feature showcasing what former pupils are doing now. The actress, singer and Britain's Got Talent judge attended the junior school when it was named Ridgemead Junior School and is believed to have taken part in a school gymnastics team. Bishop Waltham Junior School posted on Facebook on Monday, February the 20th, "Amanda Holden, please could you share with us a photo of you from when you were a pupil at Ridgeway Junior? We are doing a feature to showcase what former pupils are doing now. Appreciate you are busy, but feel this would really inspire our current pupils. Less than a day later, head teacher Darren Campbell received an image of young Amanda in her tie, passed on by her uncle. Mr. Campbell said, "Pupils and parents are always fascinated to learn that the judge on Britain's Got Talent was a former pupil at the school. A number of years ago, she was the local celebrity that opened the carnival. A number of the parents who have had children attend the school in the past were castmates with her. We reached out on social media using local groups. We kept tagging in Amanda using her official Twitter and Facebook handle, and the persistence paid off. It would be amazing, however, if we could get her to do a return visit to the school in order to meet the pupils and staff and talk about her experience at school. Former pupils are being encouraged to share photos with the hashtag XPupilsBQJS. Mr. Campbell said, "We want to try and showcase to current pupils the possible careers that are available, as well as celebrate the successes of former pupils."
Greens for go as farm shop shrugs off veg shortages. A Meon Valley farm shop has reassured customers that it will not be following national purchasing restrictions on fruit and vegetables. This comes as Asda, Morrisons, Aldi and Tesco's have placed limits on items such as tomatoes, peppers and cucumbers, with the situation expecting to last for another 2 to 4 weeks. However, Westlands Farm Shop near Wickham has been unaffected by the crisis due to its supply chains with local growers. General Manager Harry King said, "Our supplies have not been impacted by the shortage currently being experienced by some of the supermarkets. We have seen a slight increase in purchasing of some fruit and veg items, mainly tomatoes, but we can handle that because we are continuing to get deliveries from our suppliers. We are very proud of the strong connections we have with suppliers in the area. Those connections mean that we can quickly and easily restock in times like these. Local supply chains reduce shipping, storage, emissions and energy usage." Some supermarkets and suppliers have said that the recent shortages have been caused by bad weather in the southern Europe and Africa. However, Westlands Farm Shop Director Graham Collett has pushed back on these claims, saying, "These shortages have been created by UK supermarkets unfairly blocking their suppliers from passing on inflationary costs and forcing many of them out of business. The supermarket chains can do this because of their unfair market share, and many of their suppliers have nowhere else to sell. It is interesting that EU stores are full because they allowed prices to reflect increased costs and enabled their suppliers to stay in business." Responding to an urgent question in the House of Commons, Environmental Secretary Theresa Coffey said, "We anticipate the situation will last about another 2 to 4 weeks. It's important that we try and make sure that we get alternative sourcing options." And there's a photograph of, I presume, Harry King with his Westlands apron on, holding some very nice looking tomatoes.
Playground to be open for Easter. Work to install new accessible play equipment and surfacing has begun at a Winchester playground. Abbey Gardens play area is undergoing refurbishment in two phases, with the hope the playground will be ready to reopen in time for the Easter holidays in April. Phase two, including installing the new play equipment and surfacing, began in February with a parking suspension in place in Colebrook Street until March the 24th, while the work is carried out. The paths have already been upgraded to improve access into and around the area under phase one. Contractors also replaced the wooden planter with a brick one to improve its lifespan. The play area has been closed since September for its redesign, following public consultations in the summer on what users would like to see changed. Abbey Gardens will remain closed while Phase 2 is carried out by the contractors Compound UK. Much of the new play equipment, including the swings, the train and the roundabout is designed to be accessible to children with a wide range of abilities and disabilities. Following criticism that the plan wasn't accessible enough, Public Consultations Leader, Councillor Charles Radcliffe, said, "Will the new play area satisfy everyone? Almost certainly not. But, bearing in mind the limitations of space and budget, and the need to cater to a diversity of needs and expectations, it will undoubtedly be a big improvement on what was there before, and set a new standard locally for accessibility. Abbey Gardens Play Area refurbishment is the first of 9 play area upgrades planned in the town area in the coming years, meaning there will be plenty of opportunities to learn lessons and apply these to future play area schemes." A spokesperson for Winchester City Council said, "All being well, and barring some extreme weather event, works should be completed by the end of March in time for the Easter school holidays. In this case, the parking suspension in Colebrook Street will not need to be extended. A few tweaks have been made to the design since the plan was published to improve access to the swings and roundabout, with the swings likely to take longer to be open to the public. While the playground is closed, the public have been recommended other local facilities, such as the Friary Gardens, which is about a 10-minute walk, and Oram's Arbour, about a 16-minute walk from Abbey Gardens." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Abbey Gardens area, which is a lovely area. It's actually showing some snow there, so one of the extreme weather events they'd hoped didn't occur has alas occurred. But hopefully they'll be able to catch up with the work.
Sleeping rough, numbers rise. The number of people sleeping rough across Hampshire this last year has risen according to recently released figures. Published by the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, the figures are a snapshot of rough sleeping on a single night between October the 1st and November the 30th, 2022. Reacting to the statistics, Councillor David Renard, housing spokesman for the Local Government Association, said, "Councils work incredibly hard to prevent the tragedy of homelessness from happening, as well as supporting those who find themselves affected, and are very concerned at today's statistics, which are from before the worst of the cost of living crisis hit families. With evictions in the private rented sector continuing to rise, it is crucial that government urgently implement renters reform legislation to put a stop to no-fault evictions, and it is imperative that local housing allowance rates are reviewed to ensure that at least a third of the market is affordable for people claiming housing-related benefits. The building of affordable homes must also be prioritised, and councils should be given the powers and resources to build 100,000 social homes a year to address the national shortage of affordable housing. If the government doesn't urgently develop a cross-departmental homelessness prevention strategy in response, we can expect to see these numbers continue to rise."
High Street gets deep clean. The High Street in Winchester has been getting a thorough cleaning over the past few days. Parts of the pavement have been jet washed, jointly commissioned by Winchester Bid and Winchester City Council. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, thanked them for the work they have done. He said our street cleaning teams work really hard, often before many of us have left our homes in the morning, helping to make our city a welcome and pleasant environment to live in and to visit. "I am very grateful for the work that they do, which has given that it often happens in the early hours and can go unnoticed. It's important that we recognise and thank them for the contribution they make. We know that this job is an important part of welcoming into our city, and we will continue to look at ways to improve the attractiveness of the area." And there's a picture of 3 men with their jet washers cleaning the streets.
Marathon Man's charity total now tops £200,000. A man has completed his fundraising challenge of running, and are you ready, 60 marathons at the age of 60, for two Hampshire hospices. Steve Radjin from Brockenhurst took on the challenge to raise money for Naomi House in Jack's Place, hospices for children and young adults, and at the time of writing, he's raised more than £200,000. Steve completed his last marathon by running up to the hospice based in Sutton Scotney. He was greeted by 50 cheering supporters, including visiting children, staff, and Steve's family and friends, who came to cheer him through the final moments of his Herculean challenge. Steve started last August running his 26.6 mile marathons in all weather conditions. Throughout, Steve has still been working full time. Getting up at the crack of dawn to complete a marathon and then start work. Speaking after he finished his final marathon, Steve said, "It's been a hell of a journey. I couldn't have done it without the help of friends who joined me running in torrential rain and blistering heat. My incredible wife, Jerry, has been there for me through the darkest days of the challenge and kept me going. I've done it for Naomi House and Jack's Place, for the children and families who use the hospices. I've been raising money for this amazing charity since 2005, and I've been a trustee there for the past 10 years. Thank you to everyone who's given so generously." Mark Smith, CEO of Naomi House and Jack's Place, called Steve's efforts an amazing individual achievement. And he continued, "As a charity, we are dependent on voluntary contributions from the community, from people like Steve, so that we can keep on delivering expert care and support for the families who need our hospices. Thank you, Steve. You are an absolute inspiration. The funds raised will go a long way in helping the charity continue delivering support to the families who use its services. And to find out more, or leave Steve a donation, visit his Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/Steve-Radjin-60, that's numeric 60 in 60 at 60. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Steve at the finishing line. And again, 60 marathons at the age of 60 and still working full time. Well done, Steve.
We're all in awe, I think.
Farming today, the other man's grass. The government has plans to create a UK where everyone lives within 15 minutes of green space or a river. It sounds like utopia, a means of escape for all those trapped in a large urban environment as they discover a new self out in the fresh air. Maybe if the water companies ever clean up their act, they will be able to take up wild swimming in glassy-watered, pristine rivers. Then again, perhaps not. Green space is likely in reality to mean farmland much of the time, but everyone has to realise, particularly politicians, that fields are not the same as parks. Fields are workspaces where things are produced that the nation needs, in this case, food. Many farmers will have thrown up their hands in horror at this government thought train, although by the time it's on track, it may well have morphed into something different, a never-ending GS2, Green Space 2, that is forever under construction by its planners and promised for some unknown date in the future. But there could be good to come from such a scheme, as farmers everywhere are under pressure to both get by on reduced government subsidy while also facing increased competition from trade deals such as those with Australia and New Zealand, which former farmer and environment minister George Eustace condemned as wrong for the UK. Sadly, we waited until he was out of office to vent his opinion. Far better if he had pushed back while he was in a position to have some meaningful impact. We often hear how many city dwellers who have never seen a cow, a field, or the sea cannot relate to food being produced, neatly packaged, anywhere other than on a supermarketing shelf. Making it possible for the entire population to get access to green space or a river in 15 minutes would mean many would actually see farmland and connect it with the food they eat. One of the easiest ways to reach the target of net zero would be for people to learn that seasonal treats don't last all year. Get that message across, and we would not be importing the wrong foods from across the world by ship and plane, but instead would go back to buying whatever local shops could produce from local producers. Maybe it would work, or am I just being green in the naive sense of the word? This was written by Kevin Prince, who has wide experience of farming and rural businesses in Hampshire, where he lives near Andover, and across southern England as a director in the Adkin Consultancy. His family also run a diversified farm with commercial lets, holiday cottages and 800 arable acres.
The Queen's Award for Railway Volunteers. Staff and volunteers from the Hampshire Historic Railway Line have received the Queen's Award for voluntary service. Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, presented the award to the Watercress Line in Horsford during a special presentation on Monday, February the 27th. The Queen's Award for Voluntary Service is the highest award a voluntary group can receive in the UK, equivalent to an MBE for an individual. It was awarded to the Watercress Line in last year's Platinum Jubilee Honours list, but the presentation was postponed following the Queen's death in September. President of the Watercress Line, Richard Lacey, told the Chronicle, "I think we're all over the moon to win this award. I mean, it's just a significant milestone in our history, and it really plays to everything that's gone on here over the last 50 years now, from very humble beginnings and all driven by volunteers." And there's a lovely photograph of people at the Watercress Line with the trains in the background, and a lot of people all around, and all the sort of station masters or workers with their hats and their red ties, and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire in his full uniform holding up the award, and I don't know who the gentleman is who's standing beside him, maybe it's Richard Lacey, holding the award in his hand, which is purple with a crown on it.
Ex-counsellor rattles out third crime thriller. And of particular interest will be to our listeners that an audiobook version of this will be following very shortly. A Winchester author and former parish council chair has published his third novel. Les Haswell from Kingsworthy has published his latest thriller, Malick's Revenge. Based in Spain, the story follows trained killer Alan Brody, who first appeared in Haswell's second book, The Good Samaritan. Mr. Haswell previously worked as an independent consultant, helping small and medium-sized companies before taking up community roles as the chairman of Kingsworthy Parish Council and president of Winchester Rotary. His latest novel follows The Prodigal Son and The Good Samaritan, which both told the story of the fictional ex-Special Forces operative Rob McLean. Speaking on what people can expect from his latest thriller, Mr. Haswell said, "Alan Brody, a highly decorated former Special Forces operative in the British Army, is a trained killer with extensive experience of undercover black ops in the deadly battlefields of Iraq, Afghanistan, and other deniable war zones. Retired from the military and now working in the private security sector, Brody has just agreed to buy a beachfront bar and restaurant in the Almeria region of Spain. Unknown to Brody, the previous owner was being coerced by a ruthless drug cartel into allowing his premises to be used as an undercover distribution point for their illegal trade. And it seems they will not take no for an answer. Then they come head to head with the professional killer that is Alan Brody. While taking possession of the bar, Brody is persuaded by local police chief Commissario Moreno into helping him bring down these drug dealers. Moreno insisting that he works with the beautiful, enigmatic Sergeant Anita Malick, but no one is prepared for the explosion of violence that Brody unleashes on the ruthless cartel. Sounds quite exciting. Malick's Revenge is available in paperback and Kindle format, with an audiobook version to follow shortly. And this is accompanied by a picture of Les Haswell, who I'm quite envious of. He's sitting there, presumably in Spain, with the palm trees, the sun shining, and looks very relaxed and very warm, which at this moment in time would be rather pleasant.
Move paying off for busy city centre cafe bar. A popular city bar and cafe has seen continued success after the opening of its expanded premises. Cabinet Rooms on Jewellery Street opened its new extension at the end of November. Now, almost 4 months on, owners Gary Whiter and Marcus Rowe have revealed that the business has continued to go from strength to strength. The expansion saw Cabinet Rooms take over the neighbouring premises, formerly occupied by Computer Solutions. Gary said, "We've been trading next door in our original space for about 5.5 years, and as we were coming out of the pandemic, we knew we needed to have bigger space, as we were so busy, especially on weekend evenings, that we found we were turning people away. The expanded space has allowed Gary and Marcus to add more seating and a larger bar area, as well as offer a wider range of cakes and food, including breakfast and lunch." Gary added, "It has gone down really well with people. It's been really busy since we opened. It's been great." Since the bar opened, the pair have been experimenting with hosting different events, including live music on Sunday evenings, with Gary saying, "It's only really been having the additional space that's allowed us to do that." And there's a picture of Marcus Rowe and Gary Whiter in their Cabinet Room cafe, looking quite pleased with their new additions.
Southern Water told of pollution time bomb. A senior Southern Water management came under fire at a public meeting for its recent poor performance and treatment of the environment. Critics included TV journalist Georgie Palmer and actor James Murray. Toby Willison, director of environment, spoke at a city council meeting and was grilled for more than an hour by more than 10 members of the public and local councillors. The company has recently had to switch off water to thousands of households for the second time in 2 months and faced criticism for raw sewage flowing into chalk streams such as the Test, Itchen and Meon. Dr. Willison was speaking at the Winchester City Council Health and Environment Committee last night. BBC journalist Georgie Palmer, who lives in Twyford, said that she and her husband had a monthly date not to go for a meal but to clear raw sewage from the drains outside their house. She told Dr. Willison that she was a keen open water swimmer and added, "I would rather swim in the channel every day than in the River Itchen. I see how disgusting it is. What are you going to do? We are going to hear about long-term plans, but what is happening in the next 6 months? Don't fob us off." Miss Palmer also read out a question from actor James Murray, a keen angler, who called on Southern Water to work with anglers in the same way that companies do now with surfers against sewage for problems at sea. Dr. Willison, a former senior executive of the Environment Agency, said Southern Water had a problem with combined sewer overflows, CSO, which happened after heavy rainfall exceeding the capacity of pipes. He said the company was working to address the issues, that climate change was worsening with an increase of intense spells of rain. He said water companies were in arms race with the climate change, having to increase its plans in the global crisis deepens. He faced questions about Southern Water allowing phosphates into rivers, notably from farming activities. Dr. Martin Burton said parts of the Itchen, such as near Overton, were in a poor condition. Wastewater from Orsford Treatment Works is getting into the chalk aquifer that feeds the river, and it's a time bomb. He called on Southern Water to install a phosphate stripper at Orsford Works to tackle the issue. It had been raised by the late Lord Chidgey. Francis Strange, a chair of the of Compton and Shawford Parish Council said the company's environment record was abysmal and criticised it for response to the water outages that left vulnerable people, many with health conditions, without any water for several days. Dr. Williamson said that the company needed to do more to establish who the vulnerable people are. And there's a couple of pictures, one of the river Itchen flowing away, and another one of TV's Georgie Palmer with her strong views for Southern Water.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.